Hello and welcome to Don't Miss a Beat, presented by HCP Live Cardiology. Don't Miss a Beat is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Muthu Vadaganathan, and my co-host, Dr. Stephen Green, providing regular news roundup, the latest evidence and clinical trial insights across cardiovascular, renal, and metabolic diseases. The audio versions of Don't Miss a Beat are available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com.
Welcome back to this month's episode of Don't Miss a Beat. I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Muthu Vadaganathan from Brigham and Women's, and we are both very much looking forward to the ESC 2023 meeting coming up later this month. Both very much looking forward to Amsterdam. ESC has really turned into really a crown jewel among the cardiology scientific sessions. And Muthu, I know you're very much looking forward to ESC.
Yes, ESC has really become the premier cardiovascular meeting and has gained in prominence, I think, because of its global reach. And I'm always impressed year after year at the quality of science being presented. And this year is no different. And the announced hotline sessions really promise, I think, the best of cardiovascular science across each of the disciplines. And we hope to highlight some of those trials here, of at least ones that excite us and what gets us going. So without further ado, I think we can dive in. We wanted to discuss three separate trials in particular. We'd lead off with STEP-HFpEF. This is a paired clinical trial program of the GLP-1 receptor agonist, semaglutide. It's being studied in paired clinical trials of STEP-HFpEF and STEP-HFpEF-DM. That's a patient population without diabetes and with diabetes. All these patients have obese phenotypes of the HFpEF syndrome, so they have a left ventricular ejection fraction above 45%. They have elevated natriuretic peptide levels, elevated filling pressures, or other abnormalities in echocardiographic parameters or recency of hospitalization. And these trials are really intended to identify meaningful changes in quality of life. So can these therapies that have really permeated, I think, the public at large in terms of how we're approaching obesity medicine, can these therapies safely be used in the context of HFpEF? So before we get into some of the more detailed aspects, Steve, what do you think about this premise? Do you think that this is an important set of studies for the investigators to undertake?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's been so much buzz about the GLP-1 receptor agonists across all these different fields of cardiorenal metabolic health. I mean, you just had the ADA meeting a few months ago where there were so many top line results from this type of drug on just weight loss and whatnot. But, you know, as a heart failure clinician, you know, we see the obese HFpEF phenotype all the time, especially in the United States. And I think there's been a lot of buzz and thinking about the plausibility of, hey, if we just had a targeted and safe way to have these type of patients lose weight, could we improve their quality of life, if not also their cardiovascular and heart failure outcomes? So I think this type of study is long overdue. Really, the morbidity and quality of life impairment with the HFpEF obesity phenotype is, you know, dramatic. So again, if this is really a therapy targeting weight loss as the mechanism to try to improve heart failure outcomes for these patients. So again, long overdue, and these are going to be very well received, I think. It could be a blockbuster game changer for really how we think about HFpEF treatment overall on top of now the SGLT2 inhibitor class. But Muthu, what do you think? And we already know some of the results from this trial.
Yeah, I'll just put it into context a little bit that there have been uncertainties about the use of GLP-1 receptor agonists, despite their prominent role in the management of diabetes and obesity. There's been some uncertainties about their role in heart failure because of some earlier trials. They were generally smaller on the 300 patient side. called Fight and Live. These were patients who were fairly sick. They had acute decompensated heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, and there were some signals of harm, perhaps related to the mechanisms of elevations in basal metabolic rate, elevations in heart rate with this class of therapies, and maybe that was not well tolerated in the acutely ill decompensated patient with heart failure with reduced EF. These patients enrolled in STEP-HFpEF, which is about a 529-patient trial, the one that is going to be presented at the ESC, are a much more stable group of patients, typically in ambulatory care. However, as you noted, they have a substantial symptom burden despite being stable in ambulatory care. And their average KCCQ is actually markedly impaired. And they have a host of cardiorenal metabolic comorbidities. We've seen the top line results being announced on an investor call that these drugs were able to substantially reduce weight. So they were able to engage the intended target. But more importantly, and perhaps of greater interest as a scientific community, they markedly improved health status. And I was actually fairly taken aback and surprised as a clinical trialist at the magnitude of health status benefit. So Steve, could you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, no, absolutely, Mutu. So, you know, we saw from the investor call, if memory serves, a placebo-corrected improvement in KCQCS of about 8 points with semaglutide versus placebo. So to my knowledge, you know, barring maybe the HOCM trials and whatnot with mavacamten, that is the largest magnitude of benefit we'd ever seen in a heart failure trial. You know, second place now would be like preserved HF, I think about, which was a smaller US study of a dapagliflozin in HFpEF that had about a 5 point or so placebo corrected improvement. But 8 points is like a gigantic placebo corrected improvement with a therapy. And again, thinking about, well, what is the mechanism for, like, what's so special about semaglutide or this patient population? I think a lot of it might relate to what you talked about with the baseline impairment in KCQ being you know, substantial. You know, we've seen with other trials generally a relationship with the more abnormal starting point you have, you know, it facilitates, you know, if the therapy is effective, it may be a larger magnitude of benefit. You know, we've even seen that with the same class of therapy like SGLT2 inhibitors, for example. You do them in an outpatient trial, like, you know, EMPEROR trials, like EMPEROR Preserved or Reduced, compared with an inpatient initiation trial like EMPULSE, same exact therapy, lower starting point in EMPULSE facilitates a greater magnitude of benefit with KCQ. But Mutu, what do you think of these KCQ results?
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's important to recognize that KCCQ, as we analyze it typically, is analyzed on the absolute scale, whereas we're typical in terms of other clinical endpoints, we often analyze it on the relative scale. And so, as you said, the starting point really matters. And here, this obese phenotype of HFpEF is a highly impaired group of individuals in clinical practice and really at risk and with a great need for therapies like this to improve that health status impairment. So I think we look forward to STEP-HFpEF. I do think it will be one of the main trials being presented at ESC. We'll also look forward to STEP-HFpEF DM. That's a 617-patient trial that we released at a future clinical congress. We anticipate lower placebo-corrected weight loss in this diabetes cohort, as we've seen with more general use of GLP-1 receptor agonists in diabetes cohorts. Furthermore, it's very exciting. We've heard the top-line results from the SELECT trial. So just briefly, although SELECT is not a heart failure-specific trial, this is one of the largest weight loss obesity therapy, obesity medicine clinical trials ever conducted, over 17,000 individuals without diabetes, but with obesity and with a history of either myocardial infarction, stroke, or peripheral artery disease. And these patients were followed for about 5 years for a primary endpoint of major adverse cardiovascular events. We heard that there was about a 20% reduction in that endpoint. But perhaps more interesting to us and interesting in the context of STEP-HFpEF, that this trial enrolled a remarkable number of patients with heart failure. About a quarter of the trial had established heart failure. And heart failure hospitalization is actually a pre-specified secondary outcome. So I think we're going to learn a tremendous amount in this long-term trial about the safety of administration of semaglutide in a high-risk patient population, including a substantial number of patients with established heart failure.
I couldn't agree more, Muthu. I mean, that subset, you know, SELECT is such a large trial, that subset's over 4,000 patients. So we're going to have a population of 4,000 patients randomized with heart failure, randomized to semaglutide or not. And also, you know, that's including mostly HFpEF, but there's even some HFrEF patients in SELECT, over 1,300 or so. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that subset shows. As you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm for GLP-1 receptor agonists as a potential therapy for HFpEF, much less so in HFrEF based on some of those signals you mentioned in LIVE and the FIGHT trials. But again, 1,300 patients is much bigger than we saw in those smaller, older HFrEF trials. So we'll see what that HFrEF subset shows in SELECT for sure. Well, moving on, we have some other trials we'd like to discuss. And a next key one that I think will be very important and get a lot of publicity will be the HEART-FID trial. Now, this is a trial of patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, randomized 1:1 to IV iron with ferric carboxymaltose versus placebo. Now, the primary endpoint here will be, it'll be a clinical endpoint, and it'll be an endpoint of hierarchical of mortality at 12 months or hospitalization, heart failure hospitalization at 12 months, or change in 6-minute walk up through 6 months. So a hierarchical composite of those three components. It's going to be the largest of any of the IV iron studies conducted to date, over 3,000 patients, mostly North America, Australia, New Zealand, and Eastern Europe. So also some geographic regions that have been perhaps underrepresented in some of the earlier IV iron trials. I mean, just for context to say, well, where do we stand with IV iron? You know, a lot of us in the heart failure community are already really giving IV iron, you know, fairly routinely in our patients with heart failure and iron deficiency. But we first of all know that heart failure with iron deficiency is extremely common. Upwards of about 50% of our patients are going to have iron deficiency. So you really have to look for it. It's guideline recommended to be checking patients with their ferritin levels and transferrin saturation. We also know that it's independent of anemia. You know, whether the patient has anemia or not, iron deficient is still highly prevalent in our heart failure patient populations. But, you know, in terms of where we stand in terms of guideline recommendations, we already know from the smaller trials conducted, things like CONFIRM-HF, FAIR-HF2, that IV iron, specifically ferric carboxymaltose formulation, seems to improve functional status and quality of life. So things like 6-minute walk, NYHA class, KCQ. Where there's a little more uncertainty, though, is about clinical outcomes. You know, the European guidelines actually do include a class 2A recommendation for IV iron to reduce heart failure hospitalization. But notably, the US guidelines don't include that in terms of a clinical outcome. They don't note the clinical outcome benefit. And I think it's because, you know, while you have some meta-analyses and some of the smaller trials signal heart failure hospitalization benefit, technically, if you look at some of the larger programs that have been conducted, about 1,100 patients each, AFFIRM-HF and Ironman, they technically just missed statistical significance for their clinical outcome, recurrent heart failure hospitalizations or CV mortality. So again, a lot of debate. While we think there's a signal for clinical outcome benefit for IV iron, again, we're really hoping that this largest trial, HEART-FID, will really clarify that. But Muthu, where do you stand on IV iron and what are you looking forward to with HEART-FID?
I think you summarized the points wonderfully. I think this is going to be a very, very important trial to clarify a concept and a strategy that we think is important in heart failure, but we haven't had really definitive evidence from a singular trial. So alongside the HEART-FID trial, there will be an individual level, patient level meta-analysis being presented that will hopefully provide us with the totality of evidence that can help guide global guidelines. And as you said, there's been some discrepancies in US, European, other global guideline sets. And I think that this will provide a more definitive word. The items that I'm going to be looking for in particular are the components of that hierarchy are quite interesting, and they're not only assessed on different timescales, but I'm hopeful that the endpoint, if there is a benefit that's demonstrated, I'm hopeful that the benefits are carried by the top two components, the ones related to mortality and hospitalization, rather than necessarily 6-minute walk distance, because we already know from some of the earlier trials that 6-minute walk and quality of life might improve and do favorably improve with IV iron administration. But we know less definitively so about the effects on other clinical endpoints like mortality and hospitalization. And as you said, the previous trials have been perhaps just underpowered. And I think that there was some noise that was introduced in the context of COVID. Both the previous two trials, AFFIRM-AHF and IRONMAN, were particularly influenced by COVID, unfortunately. And because of that, there was noise related to either missing data, missing doses, and which is critically important, redosing as an for IV iron is very, very important. And so this is not a one and done type strategy. This is a administer at baseline, recheck iron levels and follow up if persistently iron deficient, continue to replete with IV iron in follow-up care. And that system, that protocol may have broken down in the context of COVID-19. And because of that introduced noise, we saw some instability in the endpoint estimates in both AFFIRM-AHF and IRONMAN. So hopefully more clarity here with the larger trial in a more stable context and with less influence of COVID-19.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, really you hit the nail on the head for what I'm going to be looking at too. I mean, just HeartFit can be a positive trial, but I think it really depends on, you know, what component, if it is a positive trial, what component's driving that positive trial? Is it, if it's 6-minute walk, you know, and it's pretty much neutral for the effect on, you know, all cause mortality, which you probably suspect it will be, but hopeful for heart failure hospitalization. If that's neutral and it's only driven by 6-minute walk, then even if it's a positive trial, I think it's going to have less enthusiasm. But if it is definitive for that heart failure hospitalization component driving the primary outcome, I think that'll be a huge, you know, momentum changer for the field and, you know, hopefully get some unity around the guidelines and whatnot. But then, you know, also that patient level meta-analysis to follow as well will also hopefully add some further clarity to the data as well. So I really look forward to seeing what we have. This is really going to be a big chapter in the IV iron story for heart failure coming at ESC.
I agree. So Steve, as a final trial, we wanted to discuss the QUEST trial. And this might be not as familiar to our own audience as well as to us. And so we're really looking forward to these results. So QUEST is investigating a unique compound called QLQX capsules. These are traditional Chinese medicines, and they've actually been approved by the Chinese Food and Drug Administration back in 2004 for its use in chronic heart failure. However, QLQX, as is true with many other traditional medicines worldwide, has not been subjected to a rigorous large-scale randomized clinical trial. And so QUEST is an ambitious trial of 3,080 patients targeting 620 clinical events. It's a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled, parallel group trial comparing QLQX versus placebo in a long-term outcomes trial. Patients are followed for at least 12 months with an average duration of follow-up anticipated to be about 24 months. The primary endpoint is the traditional heart failure endpoint. This is a composite of cardiovascular death or readmission for worsening heart failure, and all patients have heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. So these patients, this trial, I think, is one of the first we've seen that is now not only investigating a traditional Chinese medication, but is also being conducted on hopefully standard of care at present. So current background medical therapy, which is a high bar. And so we're really looking forward to these data. And if it does pass muster, if it does reach this ambitious target on the background of effective medical therapy, I think we as a medical community and scientific community have a lot to digest. I think how we integrate therapies like this that might be regionally available, how we integrate this in a global context will be very, very interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to learning about this trial. And I think no matter what the result, it's going to get a lot of scrutiny potentially, just because a lot of us aren't familiar with traditional Chinese medicine and, you know, QLQX. But, you know, from reviewing the literature on this, you know, again, it's amazing that, first of all, it has been, you know, around since 2004, it sounds like, and been approved by the government as a treatment for heart failure in China, yet it hadn't been subjected till testing, you know, in a large scale outcomes trial until now. But, you know, when you look at some of the smaller studies leading up to this and animal models and whatnot, you know, the biologic plausibility seems to be there based on the study signals with NT-proBNP reduction, reverse remodeling, fibrosis. So again, it'll be really interesting to see what this trial shows, interesting to see what the background therapy this trial shows. And then again, you know, if the trial's positive or signals of positivity, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what next steps are for the global community. You know, again, does this need to be a study that needs to be replicated again? Does it need to, pass muster, like that expression, Muthu? But, you know, again, what are the next steps if we want to try to get this therapy, you know, more rigorously tested or implemented in global practice? It'll be real interesting to see.
So thanks so much, Steve. And we hope to see many of you in Amsterdam. Again, I think this is one of the more exciting meetings of the year. And the science is at really the highest level. And so that's it for this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. As a reminder, all episodes of Don't Miss a Beat are available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, with a video version available on HCP Live Cardiology. Thanks so much for tuning in.